Santander's Edge Current account gives cashback to reward customers.
Do they also reward treachery?
This contains the names of people who have their salary paid into...
our rival's current account.
Nicholas!
They give me cashback on my big supermarket shop.
You'll be hearing from our lawyers.
Finding your edge with the Santander Edge current account.
18 plus, £3 monthly fee to maintain the account. Paying £500 a month excluding internal transfers and have two active direct debits. Cashback exclusions apply.
7 years. He has seven more years left on his contract. He had his new deal just kicked in. 8 years, $92.8 million. This is the cornerstone of your franchise. This is the guy who you banked on to be the rock that we shall build the Vancouver Canucks. Whammy. It's not looking good. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Not bringing much energy today, Tim. Why? What's going on?
You asking me? I have a lot of energy. I feel great. I think you're just you're seeing yourself right now. You're talking about you.
I am. Yes, I am. I am a little tired. I went skiing yesterday with the kids. We went to Crystal Mountain. It was homeschool skiing day. And I haven't skied in years and years and years. I think the last time I went skiing for real with my own skis was I went to, and this is going to sound 1%-ish, so just bear with me. I went to Colorado with some of the guys from the team. We went with Seabrook, Turco, Jake Dowell, and another guy, and we tore it up on the mountain with our wives. That was a lot. So years ago, like that's 10 years ago. So I got all kinds of muscles that are tweaked right now. It's because I don't ski very often. And I was just with the kids, so it's not like I'm ripping down black diamonds, but it was a fun day. We did go down one black diamond. Terrible idea. And I was babysitting Lillian. Sorry, this is a pointless story. And she got going with speed, and I saw her, and I tried to control her, but I knew if she got by me, dead or very, very, very much injured. So I full-on tackled her on the hill, and I tackled her, but I couldn't stop because it was so steep. And we went into one of the fences on the side of the hill and like crushed it into the fence. Her helmet went flying down the mountain. And here I am tackling this 7-year-old girl. People thought I was probably crazy. But yeah, we never went down another black diamond after that. Are you a skier, Tim?
No, I only went once. It was I might have been Crystal Mountain. That's the one that's like 45 minutes away-ish from Traverse?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, Larry took me. The OG listeners remember Larry's name from the old days at the beginning of the show. But yeah, I haven't been before or after. And he kind of taught me the whole French fry and pizza shape. And then he said, okay, here we go. And we just went. It was a lot of fun, though.
French fries and pizza. It was a good day. It was warmer. It was nice fun. But I'm a little sore, a little tired. Didn't get home till like 9:30, but it was worth it. Kids had a great time. And here we are. We haven't talked in a long time. We had the Four Nations Cup. Everybody's kind of recovering from that hangover, which, as everything starts to trickle in, viewership-wise, was a slam dunk. The most watched game as far as hockey goes in years and years and years, all across all sites. Just the best thing since sliced bread. So very good for hockey.
Yeah, the final number, I don't have it in front of me,
but 15.7 or something
across two countries. Yeah. And I think 9 in the US, something like that. And more watched than any NHL game ever, which is crazy. Matthew Tkachuk was on Jimmy Fallon last night or two nights ago, and he said it was the biggest game of his life. And Jimmy Fallon's like, you won the Stanley Cup. And he goes, yeah, I know. That's how big it was. Just the lead up and the rivalry and the heat. So pretty amazing and awesome to see those numbers come in.
Gosh, I used to be such a big Jimmy Fallon fan. And I'm just not, and I don't have a TV, so I don't have a chance to watch him. But he and like Jimmy Kimmel, I was always a big Conan O'Brien fan. I thought Conan O'Brien was very, very good as a late night host, and Craig Ferguson. I guess I'm more of the more sarcastic type of humor than whatever those guys are doing. But yeah, good for him. Jimmy, that's Showtime.
Yeah.
That's the late show. That doesn't get bigger than that.
He's the face of American hockey right now. So yeah, he's great. You did a good job.
I wonder how Brady feels. You know what I feel bad about? Brady always gets compared to what's the guy from the Goonies?
Yeah.
You got, I feel bad. No,
the big monster looking thing. Yeah.
Yeah. No, the big monster. That's right. It's so terrible. Imagine being at the peak of your fame. Like it, he will maybe make the playoffs and win a Stanley Cup, but like he's coming. He was the star of the show. And the one thing everybody references is you look like a monster. Like you look yeah. like a tragic comparison. People said I look like Mr. Bean. That's fine. I can wrap my head around that. He's a human being. He's a human being. But that guy is like a monster. And yeah. it's just so sad. We should get him on the show again and ask him, like, hey, Brady, how do you really feel about this? Because there's no good way to take that. It's like you look like a mentally deranged, crazy person.
The latest documentary is going to cover Brady and Seth Jarvis, huge personalities and two friends of the show, and that can't be an accident. So they picked two good ones there.
Well, the Amazon thing?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it's following those two guys. Seth Jarvis, did you see the story of all his buddies from like Winnipeg or wherever he came from drove all the way out, like 10 of them together to watch the game awesome. In Boston, and they go in the room because like the guys heard about Seth Jarvis's friends making the drive, and yeah, it's a great little story.
He's a good dude. He kind of started with us. I don't want to take credit for him, but yeah. kind of started with it. Anyway, moving on, we got some terrible news in the NHL. Alex Ovechkin doesn't stop scoring. And Tim has been licking his disgusting chops all day until this podcast because he's just very excited to prove me wrong. I'm not wrong very often. You know, it's very rare where I say something. I'm like, I really blew it on this one. I did this outrageous prediction years ago, bold prediction. I said, Ovi won't break the record, not even close. Well, lo and behold, he threw up 40 some last year. He's on pace this year to get a million goals. And he just doesn't stop scoring. Tim. He must have went back to Russia and got some special medicine over the break. Because first, second game back, the guy gets a hat trick. At 39 years old, about to turn 40. Like it smells a little strange to me, but he looked great. And Tim, the floor is yours. Have at it. Cause you're just grinning from your, if you're not watching YouTube, Tim has this stupid look on his face. He's so happy. He's going to make me eat crow. You think we were mortal enemies instead of really good friends. he can't wait. He can't wait.
We are enemies. We are mortal enemies. No, it's great. It's funny because they scored a ton of goals on Saturday and he wasn't part of it at all. And you're like, uh-oh, what's going wrong? 8 goals, right? Against the Penguins. Yeah. And then he gets a hat trick the next night and it caps it off with all things, an empty net. Now he's just 13 goals from the record, which means like, in case there was any doubt, he's going to do it this season. You know, like it's not like he's already the best goal scorer of all time and he's going to make it official. And it's crazy, too, because he missed a bunch of time. He missed 16 games when he broke his leg and he's still on pace for 42 goals and he's 39 years old. I know you kind of make the joke about the whole Russian thing and what's going on, but what he's doing is really special. And I know you want to, you know, discredit some of these because he's got 7 empty net goals on the year. Here's why it's not a big deal. First of all, he's tied with Rantanen. Rantanen also has 7 empty net goals, and he's got him 56 games. Rantanen has 26 goals. Ovechkin has 29. So it's percentage-wise, Ovechkin has more goals, not empty net, than Rantanen does. So it's like it's not like he's relying on empty net goals to get this done. He's doing it in all shapes and fashion. It's just maybe a little bit blown up because they're putting
it's
him out there.
25% of his goals.
Yeah, but Rantanen is even higher.
Who cares?
He's even higher.
Yeah, but who cares? Is this your big argument? You're referencing someone else has more empty net goals or a higher percentage?
I'm saying he's right on track with the other best players in the league. Like, this is not an aberration that he's scoring a bunch of empty net goals that's inflating his numbers. It's right on track with what everyone else is doing.
Oh, my gosh. So this was the big gotcha moment that Rantanen has a lot of big empty netters.
It's more not empty a gotcha moment. I'm just saying you can't gotcha. Be like, oh, Ovechkin has the most goals, but he's got like 10 more empty netters than everyone else. That's not the case at all.
No, I realize empty net goals are a part of the system. I scored one. You know, it is what... Did you ever get one, Tim? Like in men's league or like club hockey or whatever?
Not club. Probably in youth hockey, high school
or
something.
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling to know you have absolutely no goalie and you just bombs away and you score whenever you want. But I just feel like the coach, and rightfully so, good for him. He knows what he's doing. All the players on the ice, they look for Ovechkin anytime there's an empty net. And two nights ago was a prime example. Edmonton's losing 6-3. 6-3 for Pete's sake. And you pull the goalie. Like, when did everybody drink the Kool-Aid of Patrick Waugh? Like, oh, we still got a chance. We're going to score three. Maybe Edmonton because they have the firepower. I maybe get that. There's 2.5 minutes left. Like, it's just very unrealistic. You're going to score three goals in 2.5 minutes. All that aside, all the guys on the ice tip are looking for Ovechkin. Ovechkin's taking a 3-minute shift because he wants that empty net goal. It's just ridiculous. And I know on the Edmonton one, it was a broken stick and no one passed to him, but the previous six and then the million he had before that, everybody's looking for him. It's not hockey. It's like when Michael Strahan won the sack record and Brett Favre pretty much just ran to him and sat down. It's like, oh my goodness, you won the sack record for most sacks in a year. Is it real? He's going to get the goal record. Greatest goal scorer ever. Everybody knows that. He's a better goal scorer than Wayne Gretzky, hands down. This guy is an absolute legend scoring goals. But to me, maybe a little tainted. Maybe. Not much. Like, you got to give the guys props. He's doing it at an advanced age. I'm just being a stick in the mud because that's just what I like to do. And it irks people. But there is some truth to this where when they're up by two or three and there's an empty net, Ovi ain't coming off the ice. And everybody and their brother is forcing the puck to him, where if it's just a regular hockey game, and I will say, I bet you he has an extra 15 to 20 goals because of that. If not
maybe
more.
Remember the play, I think it was two seasons ago, which the 2-on-1 with Strom, where he had an empty net and he still didn't shoot it because he wanted to get over the thing. Yeah, like you see that every so often, but most of them are legit. And even the one they mentioned the other night, like it was a real empty net goal. So I know you're trying to explain this, but it just sounds like sour grapes from someone that just doesn't want to admit they were wrong or has a hard time being wrong. And you just are. It's going
to
happen.
Well, one of my goals as a kid was to break Wayne Gretzky's record. So maybe I'm a little hurt by that. I didn't get a chance. I didn't get the opportunity. Coaches didn't see the talent that was in front of them. They go, you're tall, you should fight.
The other thing that's worth mentioning now, he has 200 goals since the beginning of 2020. Which makes him the first player in NHL history to have 200 plus goals in three different decades. He had 245 in the 2000s, 437 in the 2010s, and 200 plus in the 2020s. So pretty special what he's doing.
That's really good. Timmy's the best player of our generation, you would have to say.
Goal scorer.
Crosby?
Crosby.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, best goal scorer, hands down. Is there anybody in the league? Like, everybody thought Patrick Laine was the second coming of Ovechkin. Everybody thought Matthews was the next big thing. Do you see those guys fall? Well, obviously, Laine fell off.
Yeah.
Do you think Matthews has a chance at this record?
I don't think Matthews has a chance. I think he would have had to have.
Oh, you're such a hater. You're such a hater.
I hope he does. I hope he does. It would be great if it was an American. But I think you look at, like, Ovi's. He had, like, 300 goals before he turned 23. I don't think Matthews. I could be wrong. I don't have it in front of me. But we'll see. We'll see where that goes.
But is there any young player coming up? It seems like all the young players these days, well-rounded, water bugs, do a little bit of everything. There's no just like one dimension. And I'm not saying always one-dimensional. He does a lot of things. But he's a goal scorer. Like, he is an absolute sniper. Everybody seems to be more well-rounded these days, and he just does a little bit of everything. I don't know if there's any, like, sniper. A point shooter where you put him on a spot and that's his. It's kind of not taught anymore.
I wonder if Mishkov wants to be that player and maybe Torts will
kind of. He's so creative with the puck. Like, he's so dynamic and dangling. Ovi's not a dangler. Ovi is a point and shoot type player or a shooting off a rush type player. He's not going to, very rarely is he going to take you one on one. You know, like he's just powerful. He's going to drive you wide. He's going to go to the far post. He's going to point and shoot on the power play. So, you know, just an observation. What do I know? I'm a guy who didn't get Ovechkin right on his goals. I did. You know what I did get right? And someone pointed this out in our Patreon. By the way, if you're not a part of our Patreon, what are you doing? It's a great time. So AC was weird as going back and forth today because I have it on my work computer and we're just chatting it up. He's like, you're going to be happy about this, John. Kyle Dubas just said he would trade Erik Karlsson in a heartbeat like yesterday if he had the chance. I'm like, yeah, obviously. I said that when they got him. The guy should have been fired years ago for trading for this guy. And I was just talking with him. Like, isn't it sad that those three Hall of Famers, Crosby, Letang, and Malkin, could have went somewhere and played really meaningful hockey, played in the playoffs, really put a button, a bow on their career. But no, they decided to stay and re-up and, you know, matching contracts, and everything's great. And it's good for them because they live in Pittsburgh, but it's bad for us fans. It could have been really neat to see Malkin playing in the playoffs. Go to Colorado. Crosby, go play in Montreal. You know what I mean? Letang, go play in Vancouver or somewhere else. It would have been great.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago, if you had added Malkin to like Carolina, who desperately needed that another top six center, or Letang to like Toronto, who they were desperate and still are for that puck moving power play guy. Like, and Crosby never, he was never going to play anywhere else. He never will.
He'll be a Penguin. You can't trade later. Wayne Gretzky.
No, but he's said he doesn't want to go anywhere. They're going to honor that, I guess. So yeah, it's too bad, but we'll see if Carlson goes anywhere. We have seen his name. I think Friedman pointed this out, that it was just more of a speculation than like an actual reportable rumor, but Dallas being a possible destination there. And maybe he goes and, you know, pairs with Heiskanen, or they balance out the pairs, takes a little bit of the pressure off of him. So he could be a good fit. He's still a good player. We saw that.
The question is now, because trade rumors are swirling, Tim, it's been reported that Seth Jones has reportedly requested a trade from the Chicago Blackhawks. He has not enjoyed the rebuild. He was there before when they had a solid team and they were going for it, the last ditch effort to milk every last thing of Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews and that Stanley Cup run that they were on. He's been through the rebuild. He's not a big fan of it. He still has a few years left on his $9.5 million contract, and he wants out. He wants to play meaningful hockey. And this is my question for you, Tim. You're a hockey insider. If you're a Dallas Stars team, they got all of a sudden a plethora of cap space because they put Miro Heiskanen on the LTIR. Lots of money to spend. They need some defensive help. Who you want? I don't think they'll get either of them, just to put that out there. But just hypothetical. Would you rather have Seth Jones, who's a solid defenseman, very good, offensively average, defensively pretty good? Or would you rather have Erik Karlsson, who is a race car? He goes. He is very good offensively. He is, what is the opposite of superb? The opposite of superb on defense. He sucks.
He's terrible.
He's awful. Like, he is a liability. You're playing with four forwards on the ice, and especially if the games are meaningful. Like, woof. Shelter that guy's minutes. So who would you rather have, Tim, if you're the Dallas Stars?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on, if you're the Stars, that obviously factors in, and whether or not they're going to eat some calorie and make that all work. But all things being equal, I think you have to take Seth Jones. Okay. I think I want the guy that can play defense. He can still contribute offensively. You don't need him to run a power play. You have those guys already. But you want like a do-it-all type defenseman who doesn't have any glaring weaknesses. He's just overpaid. He's still a good defenseman. And on a good team, you're going to see a lot of those like mistakes that he makes, and the parts of his game that get exposed are going to be covered up by the good players around him and a solid system that Chicago just does not have. So if I'm looking at a piece, I'd rather have Seth Jones. The problem is, he makes $9.5 million till 2028. No one's going to touch that. So do you think you see a team that they retain half of it? Do you see another team like a Utah, Seattle, whatever, like come in and help facilitate the deal by taking on $3 million of the cap space in exchange for a second round pick or whatever? I mean, do you see this guy legitimately getting moved?
Yeah, I do. I think he does get traded because he is valuable. And the highest need for most teams going into the playoffs is a defenseman, a top pairing defenseman. That's the unicorn in the NHL these days. If you have one, you hold on to them dearly because they're hard to come by. And if you can get a Seth Jones, and the good thing here, Chicago won't be good for a long time. So they can eat 50% of that cap and maximize Seth Jones' value. So if I'm Kyle Davidson here, I'm reaching out to every single team. I'm going, hey, I have Seth Jones. I will eat 50% of his cap. What is that worth to you? Because if you get him at $4.75 million, it ain't bad. It's a hell of a deal for a guy. He's locked up for 3 more years. So you have a little more term left on his contract, which is a good thing. People bag on Seth Jones, myself included, just because he carries such a high number. And when you have that number, the expectations are through the roof. And he can't live up to that because he's not a Kale McCarr. He's not a Roman Josi. He's not a guy who can go out there and create on his own. He's a solid defenseman who makes a good first pass, and he shuts down other teams' top forwards if he's motivated. But if you're willing to eat that cap, Tim, I think a team would jump at the chance to get this guy. And all of a sudden, because you're eating half of his salary, his value goes way sky high. Like, it's through the roof. You're talking two first rounders, three first rounders, and a prospect. He's only 30. He's still arguably in the prime of his career. He's played a ton of hockey in his life. He's played in meaningful games. So yeah, I think the market definitely will be there, with the caveat that you have to retain some of that salary. I don't think anyone takes him on 9.5.
So, well, I'm surprised you think he's worth that much, but do you think if he can he be the best defenseman on a legit cup contending team, or do you need him as a number two? In other words, like, I don't want to compare apples to apples because everyone has opinions, but maybe he's arguably better than Erasmus Anderson. Does it make sense for Calgary to trade for him? He's probably better than Parayko or anyone in the Blues. Does it make sense for the Blues to trade for him? Or, you know, go on down the line. Is he better than Shabbat? And does it make sense for Ottawa to trade for him? Or do you need him to, like, be a number two to a legit star defenseman?
Yeah, I think he's the Robin to a Batman, because he proved it in Chicago. I don't think he is that star defenseman. I think he never was. You know, I think he paired up with Werenski and Columbus. He did a lot of the puck movement and stuff like that. He sheltered him. And sheltered is a very loose term. Seth Jones is a good defenseman. But yeah, I think he would do well in a situation where he can be the shutdown defenseman, play third, fourth minutes, you know, and then just be a solid defenseman, not be the guy we're relied upon to do everything, because that's not who he is. I watched him for years in Chicago just fail because he's not that guy. But you put him on the Senators' blue line, you put him in New Jersey or Carolina or somewhere that really needs it, Detroit could desperately use him. They're atrocious on defense. But yeah, I think he fits in as a number two guy. A guy like the Edmonton Oilers, we can put him with Evan Bouchard, but he's got Ekholm already. So I don't know. They'll find a spot for him, Tim. You know where he wouldn't actually be terrible?
Santander's Edge Current Account gives cashback to reward customers.
Do they also reward treachery? What?
This contains the names of people who have their salary paid into
our rival's current account.
Nicholas!
They give me cash back on my big supermarket shop.
You'll be hearing from our lawyers.
Finding your edge with the Santander Edge Current Account.
18 plus, £3 monthly fee to maintain the account. Paying £500 a month, excluding internal transfers, and have two active direct debits. Cashback exclusions apply.
Is the LA Kings. Drew Doughty's getting a little long in the tooth. They lost Matt Roy last year. He would, I don't know, I might look good there, but I don't know if they're in the market for a defenseman just this moment. So, yeah, I do think he gets traded. And if I'm a GM, I'm kicking the tires. Why not? It's very rare you get a top-tier defenseman available.
Yeah, that's really the reason that we think he'll probably get moved, just because players like this don't become available very often. And he's got a lot of question marks to his game, or at least for the value. So we'll see what Davidson decides to do in terms of eating the cap or facilitating a third team into the deal to make that work. But it's going to be something interesting to watch. And there's another player that this one doesn't make much sense to me. And I need someone smart like you to explain this.
Oh,
Mikko Rantanen. Rumors have been swirling that he could be moved again before the deadline. Now, if I remember correctly, they just acquired him about a month ago. How does it make sense that they were already thinking about flipping him? Is it just that they don't think they can lock him up long term, or what?
Yeah, that's it.
But doesn't... Yes, but you're contending this year and he's a top 10 player in the league. How does he not make you better? Like, you made that move already.
Well, they are more concerned with the future, rightfully so. So if you can swap him for somebody else, like if they could go out and trade him for a Martin Nietzsche, by the way, like something like that.
Yeah.
And to get a young guy you can get under contract who you know wants to stay in Carolina. And that would be a smart play. You know, a guy who is just entering the prime of his career. But in all seriousness, no, I'm surprised they didn't do their due diligence before they got him. I'm surprised they didn't have a conversation with Andy Scott, his agent, and say, hey, we want to trade for him. Does he have any interest in staying long term? Because it sounds like they're going to ditch him if he doesn't want to stay long term. So to me, this is just not your due diligence by Eric Tulsky. Like, what are we thinking when we trade a huge part of our future in Martin Nietzsche's? And then all of a sudden, this guy doesn't want to stay. I don't understand I just don't get it sometimes where it's a easy one question. Will he resign? Would he resign if we traded for him? Just give me an answer. What are the odds? Because right now, Tim, they have offered him over $100 million. They've offered him a $105 million contract over 5 years. That's the most that's a lot of money. $13.5 million per year.
8 years.
Reported. Right? 8 years, yeah.
Yeah.
$105 million. And he's not responded. So if I'm the GM, you are having buyer's remorse. So now you're negotiating at a state of a deficit because teams know you want to get rid of this guy. He's valuable, yes, but they know they can get him in the offseason because he's not going to stay in Carolina. So do you think a team's going to go out and give him a prospect and a first rounder? I don't know. I don't think they get their investment back, what they traded for him.
And some guys you know just want to be a UFA at the prime of their career. So they can go to the open market, have choices, make the most money possible. And sometimes you kind of villainize them because you want them on your team. You want them to stay where they are. But it's their prerogative to do that, right? And to maximize their return. And it's their family. It's their future. It's all that stuff. And he might just be one of them, especially since he's not an American. He's not tied to any particular area. He doesn't have family in the Northeast that's bringing him out there or whatever. Like, so he can go anywhere. And you also have to remember that he had allegedly had no idea the trade was coming. That's up for discussion. But as far as he's concerned, what he said is that he was blindsided by the whole deal, which means he's still making sense of it all, talking about it with his family. Like, where do we want to be long term? And I think he's probably coming around to the Carolina. It's a nice city. It's a nice area. It's a good team. They're going to be contenders for a long time. He makes them better. I think he does end up taking that 8-year, $13+ million deal, but it's hard to say. And then my other question is, does the fact that he was traded from Colorado, who, by the way, is in the middle of a playoff hunt that had great chemistry, that he got along great in the room, McKinnon wanted them there, McCarr wanted them there, the fact that they traded him away and not even at the deadline, is there any part of you that thinks maybe that there was a red flag that they were willing to move on from him the way that they did?
No, because you would have heard it. It would have been in the news. Something would have leaked. Something would have been said, much like is happening in Vancouver right now. But I don't know. All reports are, it seems like a good dude. Like he's just, there's been no red flags. It's not like a Nishushkin issue in Colorado that they've dealt with. Like that was obviously well reported and documented. So no, I just think they saw the writing on the wall. He was asking for too much money. He expected $14, $15 million, and they have a firm, hard line. McKinnon is our cap. No one will make more than our captain and our best player, Nathan McKinnon.
Not the captain. What?
Not the captain. Who's the captain? Oh, Landeskog, that's right.
Landeskog, I know.
So I just feel like they cut bait, and they made the right decision getting rid of him, and that was that. And so now he's in the open market. And to me, this whole situation screams of hockey destinations. Where do you want to go if you're a hockey player? And I think this is where big markets and big teams really stand out, because no offense to Carolina. And Tim, I know you live there. I know they've been competitive for years and years and years, and they have a really sweet team and it's a lot of fun. But do you really want to invest 8 years in Carolina? Do you really want to just put down roots in Carolina? If you're a guy from Finland who has just got done playing with a tremendous group in Colorado, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't like the way Rod the Bod coaches. Maybe he's trying to feel out the organization. Like you said, guys like to go to free agency. There will be a lineup of suitors for him when he hits free agency in a couple months. So why not just wait? And if you're the Carolina GM, you can't wait. You have to go. You have to trade this guy, even if it does, and it will affect their Stanley Cup contention this year, because they have a Stanley Cup team right now. But the tricky part is, what would you do? Do you wait and lose him in free agency and maybe win the Stanley Cup? Odds are right now, they're one of six or seven teams, I would say, could win the cup. Or do you trade him and make your team worse, but in the long run, it's better? It's such a tough decision. And for our listeners, let me know what you would do, because it's such a nuanced decision to make. Do you go all in, or do you protect your job in the next 3-4 years because you're going to get some good prospects for this guy if you trade him? It's so hard, and this is why it's difficult to be a GM. I don't know what I would do. It's difficult.
if you trade him, the value of the return is going to be less than what you gave up for Rantanen, right?
I've been saying it for years. You, whoever trades the best player loses, usually in a trade.
So they won the trade to acquire Rantanen, but if they get rid of him, they're going to...
Yep.
Yeah, and they're not going to get a Nietzsche's back this time around. It's going to be a first or a young player or something good. But yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah,
I don't know. But anyways, anything else on this topic, Tim?
No, let's get into our quick hits here. There's a lot of them this time. Ryan Hartman, he appealed his 10-game suspension, and the NHL, after hearing his appeal, reduced it from 10 to 8. Per Jared. Gary Bettman, and Hartman is elected to accept that reduction. He's not going to go to the third party. And basically the way that this went was that the NHLPA on his behalf argued that it was, quote unquote, a mere accident with an unfortunate outcome, which is something that I can understand the more you watch the clip and the breakdown of it. But Bettman says that Hartman had his elbow up, put his arm on Stützle, shouldn't have done it. It was reckless, and 8 games should be sufficient, quote unquote, to serve as an appropriate wake-up call.
Shocked. I guess I'm not too shocked because the NHL always does things I don't expect. I thought it should have been 10, if not more. So the fact that they're reducing it, I don't know. It's very strange to me. It was a very just aggressive, unnecessary, not a hockey play. And so if he's hanging his hat, planting his flag on, it was an accident. I guess, you know, he's prone to accidents, this guy. So it's, I don't know, whatever. 2 games he saves, like, probably $80,000 because he was losing a ton of money on the suspension. So it'll be interesting when those two teams play each other again. Friend of the show, Zach McEwen, might get called up and have a little talk with Ryan Hartman.
That would be fun.
That'd be a lot of fun.
Another one, this is kind of a nice positive story that I noticed the other day. Shane Wright, if you remember, he was
going first overall. A couple years ago,
he didn't. He fell in the draft. He goes to Seattle. He was stuck in the minor leagues, couldn't make an impact. He was scratched in November, healthy scratched. He's now 15th in the NHL in points per 60 minutes. That's ahead of Sidney Crosby, Forsberg, Jason Robertson. He has 32 points in his last 40 games. So nice to see someone that takes a little bit longer to develop finally start to put things together. And hopefully, you know, the Kraken have a nice, young, good player on their hands that they can build around in the future, which they were hoping for the first time around.
Yeah, great story. You know, a ton of potential. There was a reason he was the, you know, odds on favorite to be drafted number one overall a few years back. But, you know, I just feel bad for him just because he was put in that situation. Yeah, all the spotlight was on him. It's tough. It's tough to produce if you don't have the chutzpah. And obviously, he's got some resolve because he battled through that. He's playing great hockey. Good for him. Seattle could use some good young players in their system because they get Kako from the Rangers. Shane Wright starts to play a little better. All of a sudden, you have some guys to build around, and then the future looks a little better. I don't even know how Kako's been doing, but he's a young player who has a high ceiling if he gets going. So I like that. Good for you, Shane Wright.
You know who no one's talked about? I just looked him up. I haven't heard his name all season. Matty Beniers. He had 57 points his first year, won the Rookie of the Year, 37 and 77 last year. He has 32 and 59 this year on pace for about 50.
Oh,
too bad. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I haven't watched the games. I wonder. I'd love to know from a listener who follows the team. Is it him? Is it the team? The system? Hopefully, he comes back and produces.
Yeah, they tried to invest in the defense. They got Adam Larson. They gave Vince Dunn a huge contract. And it's just, if you give money, big money, to guys who aren't going to push the team and really be an impact player, it just sinks you. It really, really does, especially in the back end. It's a huge deal. You're investing in the right guys. And obviously, they're good defensemen. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, you know, Vince Dunn, remember he had that one magical year where everything was going right? Was that in St. Louis?
I think so. Yeah.
And then he signed the big ticket and everybody thought he was going to take off the next hot thing, much like a Brandon Montour, who I believe, if I'm not corrected, is on Seattle as well. He is. And so they're saddled with these contracts. $7 million plus for these two guys where their best hockey was somewhere else. Then they go to Seattle and it's like, ooh, buyer's remorse, oopsie daisy. And all of a sudden those guys are 30 going on $1 million and the contracts are looking very, very bad. So it's just.
And Vince Dunn was 2 seasons ago. It was with the Kraken and he had 64 points, 14 goals, making $4 million a year. Then he signs the big ticket at 7.3 and 46 last year. He'll probably do about that this year too. So,
which is not bad. 46 is great for a defenseman, and he's a good solid D-man. But listen, you're making almost 7.5. We need you in the 60-70 point range if you're making that much money. That's the business, baby.
Yeah. So the next one here, and this is the team we've been kind of dancing around that I think we should spend some, maybe we should do a whole episode on teams that should be sellers. The Boston Bruins, they lost Hampus Lindholm out for the rest of the season with a fractured patella, which I think that's in the shoulder. If I'm correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, tough blow for them, although it's not going to super matter. You know, they're just not going to be there, and they're having some discussion. They're not shopping Brad Marchand, but they're getting a lot of calls on him. His contract is up. Wouldn't be shocked if he gets moved and some other pieces get moved too.
Patella is the kneecap.
Kneecap. Okay.
I had a chipped patella and I had to get it smoothed out because it was tearing my meniscus, which made it very painful to walk. So I had that surgery done on my knee. But anyways, honestly, this could be a blessing for the Boston Bruins. Because if Lindholm is in, he's a good hockey player. He shores up the defense. He makes them better. Maybe they just are under the impression that they're a good hockey team and they can compete. They win maybe a few more games on the bubble. This is a blessing for them. They will miss the playoffs. They will have to regroup. And I am happy that this happened for the Boston Bruins in the long run. Trade Marchand. Lindholm is gone. Maybe try to get rid of Brandon Carlo. Try to get rid of a couple other pieces. And regroup around Pasta, regroup around Swayman and McAvoy. That's it. That's your sole job. But knowing Don Sweeney, this dum-dum will blow this in a big way. He'll ask for too much. He'll value his players too high. He won't make a trade. And then you'll pull some fire sale right at the last second and just get just the cupboards stolen by some GM because Sweeney's so just terrible at his job. Don't you think that's going to happen? You'll get fleeced.
I hope not. I'm ready to move on from a couple of players, including
everybody.
Yeah, Marchand. I just love him. But Frederick, Charlie Coyle, I think Carl. I really like Carlo. But yeah, we got to do something just to free cap space.
Pull the plug. Listen, everybody's available. Everybody is available. If you want Pasta, you trade him. If you want Swayman, you trade him. I think you have to start from scratch. That's it. Like, nothing is off the table for this team. Nothing at all. So I just think you got to be realistic about the Boston Bruins and where we are moving forward. This is not a good hockey team. I think time has caught up with them. Last year, they were just somehow on a magical run. I don't know how last year happened, but they've came down to earth. They're in reality now, and they're just a bad team. Their first line sucks without Pasta. Their second line is a joke. Their third line is okay. I don't mind it. And their fourth line is garbage. So you have to move on from this whole team. Zadorov has been okay. And there's just, Tim, it's time.
But I really like this guy. But, you know, he was fun to watch when we were in the playoffs. I like him. Remember Swayman last year, even though we lost in the first round? He's so good.
Second round. Yeah, I know.
Second round. He's so good. He got us to the second round. He's so good.
Moving on to the next thing. Trevor Zegras was suspended for 3 games by player safety for his hit to the head of Michael Rasmussen of the Red Wings. I saw this one. Pretty blatant. They got that one. Yeah. I think exactly right. The last thing here, and this is something that we probably also deserve to spend more time on. We might spend some time on Thursday later on the week talking about the Canucks and what's going on there. But Elias Pettersson was quoted about like stuff going on in the ice. And he said, quote unquote, it was annoying to deal with the media. This is the guy that wears an A for your team. This is the guy that was supposed to have everything fixed when you get rid of JT Miller. And it's just gotten worse and worse. And if you look at his stats since like going back to like mid-January or the last 6 weeks or something, including the Four Nations faceoff, he's averaging like 30 points over an 80-game pace. It's really bad. And it's tough when you see like a guy who you know is struggling. Part of me feels for him. Like he's getting all this negative attention. He can't go anywhere without getting asked about it. But he's giving like the worst. Remember how Marner would have these horrible quotes with the PR stuff? This seems worse than that. So it's starting to get pretty ugly.
7 years. He has 7 more years left on his contract. He had his new deal just kicked in. 8 years, $92.8 million. This is the cornerstone of your franchise. This is the guy who you banked on to be the rock that we shall build the Vancouver Canucks. Ooh, whammy. It's not looking good. And correct me if I'm wrong. Was there a certain podcaster who said we shouldn't build around this guy because he's got a bad attitude? It was me.
You also said that you were wrong and that he won you over and you came around on him.
And he did. But you know what? A zebra never changes his stripes. So he's showing his true colors. Things are hard. The media's weird. He's shutting her down, baby. Shutting her down. And I'm here for it. Good thing the West is just top heavy. They're going to get into the playoffs, these guys. And they could scare a team. Thatcher Demko's just terrible story. Tragic. They had him, they'd be a much, much better team. But the bigger question is, and maybe we should get into this another episode, really do a deep dive on the Vancouver Canucks. This affects Quinn Hughes. This affects the long-term trajectory of this team. So, another time.
But yeah, I mean, Brock Besser's contract is up. There's a lot of rumors around him. He could get a pretty penny. He's again, a rare thing that a goal scorer like that comes on the market. And Pedersen, I want him to turn it around. I think all of us do. He's a 100-point player in this league. He has been. He's been over a point per game for several straight years now. He's going to be a good player again at some point. Maybe it won't happen until next season. Maybe this is going to be just a lost season for him. But even if he does turn it around and get back to that level, I think he's already proven that he's not a leader, that he's not a guy that you can lean on in the hard times. He's not a guy that's going to rise to the occasion. So he might be 100 points, but an empty 100 points, or a guy that shuts it down in the playoffs, or a guy that just like isn't going to go through the bumps of a long season career like you've seen with some of the other great stars in this league. Like, you can't compare him to Crosby and Taze and Bergeron and those guys, Kopitar, Giroux even, but he's clearly not them, which is too bad.
Yeah, don't look now, but JT Miller is over a point per game since he joined the New York Rangers. He's fit right in, seamlessly. He goes to the Four Nations. He plays terrific for Team USA. So,
and he's joining a stacked power play. Like, he's not the first option. He's not getting all the best looks, and yet he's making it work while shutting down other teams. So,
oopsie, maybe we made a mistake there. And the Rangers, gosh, I want them to make the playoffs so bad. I really, really do. Right now, they're far from it because the Eastern Conference is so, so competitive. They're 2 points out. But there's a bunch of teams in the mix for the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. I want the Rangers in. I think it'd be fun. But anyway, anything else, Tim?
No, yeah. I'm trying to get a guest for later in the week to talk Vancouver. If not, we'll have to do some deep dive on some selling teams and who should be a seller, who should be a buyer. I think that would be fun.
Well, I think we're starting to see a clear divide, at least in the Western Conference. But in the East, there are some teams that are on a bubble. And this is the hard time of year. If you're a GM, and I've said it for years, if I'm the Ottawa Senators, the Detroit Red Wings, teams that are in the playoffs, but realistically, they might not win the Stanley Cup. They won't win the Stanley Cup. What do we do? Do we buy? Do we sell? Do we stand pat? Do we invest in the future and trade some of our veteran guys? Questions that need answers. And Tim and I will answer them. Maybe Thursday, but definitely by next week. But that being said, thank you everybody for listening. We appreciate your support. We'll talk to you later. Cheers.
Santander's Edge Current Account gives cashback to reward customers.
Do they also reward treachery? What?
This contains the names of people who have their salary paid into
our rival's current account.
Nicholas!
They give me cashback on my big supermarket shop.
You'll be hearing from our lawyers.
Finding your edge with the Santander Edge Current Account.
18 plus, £3 monthly fee to maintain the account. Paying £500 a month excluding internal transfers and have two active direct debits. Cashback exclusions apply.